Yo, Z-Pack, this episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build Health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up.
Greetings, Z-Pack. It's your boy, Z-Dog MD, a.k.a. Dr. Zubin Damania. We are broadcasting live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And unless you've been hiding under a rock, you will understand that we've recently been the victims of one of the largest mass shooting in modern U.S. history. And we've been talking about it the last couple days. We've been standing in blood donation lines. We've been reporting about what's going on at UMC Hospital, Sunrise Hospital, Desert Springs, the St. Rose System, everybody taking these patients in this horrible attack from Sunday and sorting it out. And we are so, so excited to have with us one of the frontline healthcare professionals who was there the morning after the attacks in the trauma ICU at UMC, which is my hospital, who has joined us today. She is a APRN, an advanced practice RN in trauma ICU at UMC Hospital, and was there on the front lines and is here to share some of the things that have happened from a caregiver point of view with us. Welcome, please, Allison Anderson. Allison!
Hi, friends.
And you guys will recognize Allison from like every single Z-Dog video we've ever done. She was in the Moana video thanking nurses. She was in 7 Years. She was in Lose Yourself. She was in EHR State of Mind. She always steps up when we need somebody to be in a video. And she's always at work when it happens at UMC.
Sometimes, yes.
Yes.
Sometimes
and she's like, no, I got a 5-minute break.
I'm going to come. Stop by.
So, Allison, you were in the very unique position of walking into work Monday morning, having heard what had happened, and picking up a service on the trauma ICU of patients who had gunshot wounds, had other injuries related to this mass event that happened on Sunday night. What was that like? Because you do this for a living. You're a trauma ICU
right.
advanced practice nurse. I mean, what was that like?
Right. So, like any trauma center, this is, you know, mass casualty, like this is a horrible event. It's something that you hope never happens, but you're always training for it to happen. And the way that UMC is set up, you know, most of your major trauma centers see a lot of penetrating traumas. So your level ones, your county hospital level ones, you can kind of tell a trauma center by the type of business they do, right? So
yeah.
a trauma center like ours that does a lot of penetrating trauma, we were perfectly set up to take care of these patients.
So by penetrating trauma, you mean gunshots, knife wounds,
impalement, stuff
wow.
like that.
Wow, wow.
So,
unfortunately, you're really good at it.
Urban,
already.
They are inner city. They see majority blunt trauma.
Blunt trauma. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you guys do a lot of car accidents.
Oh yeah, yeah absolutely.
Yeah. So the whole 9 yards. Now you guys are a free at UMC. We're talking about UMC
right.
Hospital. And by the way, Z-Pack, this is the hospital that you were able to raise $40,000 for yesterday when we put the call out. We are so proud of you guys. It is our hospital. It's a hospital where I have privileges as a hospitalist. I'm not much use in acute trauma, but I hopefully will be of use as the patients
right.
come out of the ICU. And it's that hospital that Allison works at. So you have one of the few freestanding trauma departments in the country.
Right, so what that means is that the hospital, even though we're connected with UMC, we have literally a hallway between us and UMC,
yeah.
Our entire trauma effort exists in one place. So the trauma resuscitation bay is right around the corner from our CT scanner, is right around the corner from our 3 dedicated trauma operating rooms and our trauma ICU. It's all in a circle. So a patient comes in, they can be minutes to get from the trauma bay to the OR to the ICU.
And that is not necessarily the case
That's
in a lot of places.
No, a lot of places they have a dedicated trauma bay within the ED.
Right, and that's what I remember right. having back home. But here, everything is co-located. So you
exactly.
can go from the OR to CT to ER. ICU is right there too, trauma
It's all
ICU.
On the first floor. Yep,
all
it's all
on the
right
first
there.
Floor. Mm-hmm. So you're not spending yep. a lot of time transporting up and down elevators, doing
nope.
all that. And yep. I've toured this facility. I've consulted there. It is an amazing, amazing,
yeah.
amazing place. And the stories that come out of there of people's lives who are saved. And you guys have an amazing track record there.
Right. And here's what that lets us do is it lets us have a staff that's dedicated to doing trauma. You know, the nurses that work in trauma recess, that's what they do. They're experts and taking care of trauma patients.
That's just all.
Same with our ICU, same with, yeah, it's just, it's purposely designed that way to take care of exactly what happened here on Sunday.
So we, in many ways, as horrible as this incident was, it was very fortunate that we have this facility at UMC. And also,
absolutely.
I mean, Sunrise took a lot of patients, Desert
definitely,
Springs,
they
all did. But the sickest, most ill patients that were taken care of at UMC, they're in exactly the right place to be.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, a lot of, every community has a trauma system. And so it's really helpful for people to know their trauma system. Mm. So you move to a city and you want to know where those dedicated, where those verified trauma centers are. So Las Vegas, you know, we have UMC, which is level one, we have Sunrise, which is level two, and then we have St. Rose, which is level three.
Right.
And so based on your injuries, our EMS are trained within the trauma system by catchment areas, by our trauma field triage criteria, where to bring the patient so they get the right care.
So here's where it got weird on Sunday night. A lot of private cars threw patients in and drove them to the closest hospital, which may have been Sunrise, may have been Desert Springs.
Exactly.
And the question is, from a triage standpoint, that may or may not have been the right answer, but in the end, everybody's taking care of patients at the top of their abilities. Now, when you, and we've talked to Danita, who's the chief experience officer at UMC and has been all over the national and international news doing her thing, but what I wanted to do is talk to you, because you were there that morning picking up the service of patients. And what did you see? Because the New York Times had a piece called Controlled Chaos.
Right, right, right.
UMC Hospital and the madness of mass shootings. But you were there. What was your impression of how things were flowing?
So the way that trauma works is very much like the title of that article. Everyone, it looks like chaos, but it's really a well-planned, well-practiced way of assessing and treating patients. And so there are a lot of people involved, there are a lot of different services involved, a lot of people that have responsibility to come to activations, but everyone knows their role, everyone knows what to do, and there's a system for how to evaluate and treat patients. So we work in a very structured system where we know who's in charge, and that in charge person delegates, and it may look like chaos, but it's not chaos at all.
Wow, and that makes sense, because that's been my experience with trauma, especially in the ER. When you walk into a trauma activation, it look, again, from the outside to the untrained eye, it's chaos. Mm-hmm. If a reporter were to see it, they would be like, ah, running around. But you guys know, okay, this is happening, and we're going to get this image, we're going to do that, we're going to get that. And now, here's the thing. So you saw a bunch of these patients, and we've seen a lot of news about it. I mean, what's your impression? Is the hospital staffed appropriately? Do you have the resources? Is it out of the scope of what the hospital's able to do?
Right. So a surge like this is going to tax any system.
Yeah.
There's no emergency room, there's no trauma center that's equipped to take 50 patients, 100 patients.
There's 100 patients,
right. And so, and you wouldn't be able to build and staff a hospital.
You would wreck the economics,
So that's part of our planning system, is how do we surge when the needs, you know, dictate that. And so that's why we practice, that's why we do these disaster trainings. We have phone call lists where we know who's gonna get called in, who's gonna be at home.
So there's
and then everyone just comes in.
They all come in anyway.
Then, you know, people who are able to come in and help. And
here's a question. Is it bad when everyone and their mom just shows up?
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. Yeah. So if you, we got a lot of comments like, well, I'm here on vacation, and I'm a nurse, can I come and volunteer my time? And I mean, the truth is, if you don't have a Nevada license,
you can't
practice in Nevada as a nurse. But even people that are on staff of the hospital, if they have a specific skill, if they have something that they can offer that they know the team needs, then we're happy to kind of get help. But
so, I mean, if you need COPD management, an acute GI bleed, pneumonia, gout, and old age not otherwise specified, I'm your man.
You got me covered?
But
all right, good.
The people you're actually calling on that list are trauma surgeons, trauma nurses, anesthesia, OR techs. And you're getting materials ready, because you're going to end up running out of supplies as you go through all this. So you might have to reach out to other hospitals, and there's a whole chain of events that's put into place. But you guys in particular, being our only level one trauma center in Nevada and serving parts of California as well.
Right. Oh, yeah. Catchment area is pretty big.
Catchment area is huge. But on top of that, you're a freestanding trauma. You guys are traumatologists. You are the specialist.
Sure.
That's all you do in that space. You guys are particularly well trained. In fact, there was a lot of discussion, and people have been messaging me, and then you confirmed this, that you guys trained with folks from Orlando Regional Medical Center, the Pulse nightclub shooting, to try to see what lessons did they learn from this big surge prior to this. So you had already gone through some training specifically for this sort of scenario.
Yeah, it's really, we just had, so I've been to several talks of the from the Pulse nightclub shooting, and just come away with an enormous respect for what they did in that particular situation. And before, you know, this week, that was the worst shooting we'd ever seen. And the lessons that we learned from them, there's no doubt that that helped us prepare for this.
Yeah.
So what we recently had was a kind of a combined education where we got together with our EMS folks and some Metro, and we had this evening kind of talk where they came and talked about their lessons learned. They talked about everything, details from, you know, how they handled family reunification and the important things that you might not think of when you're doing a disaster drill, when you're doing, they talk about how they train. They're amazing at disaster training. They did a disaster drill at night, like a couple months before the shooting. Like, they were the most prepared. And plus, they were like three blocks down. It was, I mean, I really have an enormous respect for what they did.
So it comes again to preparing
right.
for those few hours on which your entire...
Right. Which is a pain, like disaster drills.
They're painful.
Are not
I mean,
fun.
You were talking about going training at night.
Right, like
right?
who
like
is
you're
gonna
getting people to come in?
And exercise.
You
right.
have kids.
It's not fun.
You have a family. Right.
Yeah. And so the administration of the hospital has to devote resources
right.
to disaster response. Disaster training is hard to do.
It's not sexy.
No.
It doesn't pay money
right.
to administrations, but these guys do it,
right?
Right, because they have to, and they know it's the right thing to do, and they learn from. And you know, you were telling me, and actually, before I go on to that, I wanted to say, you have a military background as well.
Right.
Did you find that that helps you to take care of traumas in these situations?
I think. Oh yeah, I definitely. It's a way of approaching a situation. You know, from the military, we learn a very structured way of doing everything, right?
Yeah.
And so the way that we do exercises in the military is the same way the hospital incident command system is set up, you know, and it's so it really resembles
what you guys do,
a military exercise, because everyone's in the room and they wear the vests and they do the, everyone's got their job sheet and they know what to do and they know who to call, and it's very, like, it makes me feel at home, like I'm in there.
Air Force?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
And do you find, so I know on the battlefield they learned a lot about treating trauma.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the use of tourniquets again came
right,
back.
Right.
It had fallen out of favor. Now they're saying, no, what they found on the battlefields in Iraq, Afghanistan was using tourniquet. Actually, those people lived
right.
more likely to live. Other things were these quick in and out operations where mm-hmm. they just do a temporary
damage
stent.
Control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They stop bleeding, but then they go back and revise later instead of spending a lot of time doing definitive procedures up front.
Right, definitely. And I mean, all throughout history, trauma training advances mm-hmm. enormously in times of war.
Yeah.
Because right? you have this group of healthy population. I mean, even think about World War I, World War II, this healthy population. I mean, it's advanced surgery so much. And there are wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. We actually had the advantage of researchers. Like, we had people doing research
on these techniques during the war.
And
yeah.
so, I mean, the advances that we've made with damage control resuscitation and the 1-to-1-to-1 blood transfusion ratios, things like that.
Exactly.
We would not have known about that. We would not be able to.
Giving clotting factors up front, the nature of fluid resuscitation instead of saline, just giving
right.
blood. So those things we learn on the battlefield. In fact, there was a quote I read recently that said, war helps only one sector of the humanities, and that's medicine.
Hmm.
Because we learn from the horrors of it and we're able to repair things better.
Right.
And so it's really interesting. So going back to this morning, so in the morning of Monday when you come in and you worked a full shift today and everybody's been super busy, one thing that you'd mentioned to me was that normally when you call consults, sometimes it's like pulling teeth. That's just
right.
the nature
yeah,
of medicine. We turf and we block and we do that. That's
right.
our culture. But when something like this happens,
right.
what did you see?
So Monday, like I've just shared this with several people that I've talked to after that. Monday was like, it was a horrible day, but it was a great day to be working. The amount of teamwork that people showed was just it just was, it was amazing. You called somebody and they were able to help you. Our other sister services within the hospital were like asking us to take patient, you know, to take care of some of our patients, to try to offload and keep the flow going, keep the hospital moving. And it was just one of those days where the team worked exactly how it was supposed to work. You know, people came in, people called. It was just really, really great. It was really nice. Everyone was there. They had a single mind. They were single purpose to kind of get the job done. And that's what it's all about.
Doesn't that feel like what we always talk about health 3.0 being?
Kind of,
It takes something like this to bring us together and show that, oh, we can actually work together. We can support each other. We can work together to support each other in service of the patient with a smile and offering our services, knowing that we have something to offer. And you as an APRN getting to practice at the top of your license with doctors and nurses and anesthesiologists and everybody in the trauma ICU, like that is health 3.0 and it shouldn't take a disaster to trigger it. So when you told me that, I remember thinking, wow, because we all know what it's like, you know, trying to get a consult in the middle of the night. And the fact that people were offering to take patients is apt. That is what it's all about. And it's not unique to UMC, although I think UMC is particularly well trained to handle these kind of events, but it's unique to us as healthcare people and human beings that when we're called on, we step up against all odds. It happened at the Pulse, it happened at ORMC, it happened at Dallas and Parkland. And the Dallas guys sent you guys some food, right?
Oh yeah, well, and that's the other thing about being at work on Monday is the amount of food that was sent was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Z-Pack, like we've been
I've never eaten so much pizza.
We were talking about this the other day. Hey guys, send them food. And they got hella pizza and sub sandwiches.
So much food.
Tell me about
the
food.
So we started out in the morning, you know, we're buckling in for like a rough day. We know it's gonna be a long day. And the first, like we had barely started organizing our day, getting ready to get rounds done, and looking at our patients. And the first wave of food comes in and it's a plate of Chick-fil-A breakfast biscuits from the Parkland Trauma Center.
I love it.
Right? So it's just this really amazing camaraderie. Like these guys know exactly what we're going through. They know exactly what we're facing the morning of coming in after a horrible event. Your community doesn't know what's going on. Everybody's kind of in shock. Just wants to help, just wants to get something done. And you know, you look at these, and we know, so the trauma community is small too, so we know these characters,
these people
each of these trauma centers, and so we know that the people sending us this love, sending us this food, and that's how we express, you know, appreciation and care is like,
of course it is.
Food.
Yeah, we're hungry all the time.
So it was really touching, like it was really neat to get that stuff, notes from people all over the place, all over the country, all over the world. We got, you know, you get just messages, just really, the amount of support was inspiring.
And I get tons of messages. People want to come here. They want to do stuff. I'm like, you don't have a license. We got to work on that. But you know, this is the thing. Like, I think the nice thing about planning is it all, I remember seeing Chesley Sullenberger, the guy who landed the plane in the Hudson. And he said the only reason he pulled that off is, first of all, he had billions of hours of training for exactly that.
Yeah.
And of course it all falls apart when you're there, but then it kicks back in.
Yeah.
And then he had a team. He had a team who all stepped up and just gave it everything, and they landed that plane. That's what provided the lift that landed that plane. And it's the same with trauma. It's the same with medicine. It's the same with all of this stuff. Tom, do you see any great comments here? Because we have Lindsay Joyce, a former Parkland OR nurse, worked with the amazing trauma team all the time. Really proud of that team and the trauma team in Las Vegas. Thank you, Lindsay.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And
I know for a fact that there were a lot of Z-Packers that were sending in food, and in the community, the places they were ordering food from, we're throwing in free desserts and free salads.
Yeah.
And doubling the order.
That's so awesome. There were pallets of water and sodas and stuff. It was unbelievable.
You and I are Las Vegans now.
Right, yes.
Have you ever seen our community come together like this?
It was so wonderful. It was really neat. Like people will say, you know, the Las Vegas medical community is
fragmented and disjointed.
No one talks to each other.
Yeah,
no
they all hate each other.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it was not the case. Like people came together in an amazing way. I would go into the lounge and just to like get a drink and everyone hugged me. You know what I mean? It's like we're kind of all together.
Wow.
And I'm not like a sentimental person.
No. I mean, you're heck of a military girl. That's why we love you.
It's neat. You know, it's neat to feel the connection with people and kind of like those other trauma centers. We had somebody send a gigantic bag of iPhone chargers and
oh my god, that's brilliant. Genius.
That's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's
and genius. Extension cords.
Wow.
With power strips.
Because you need them, because you're there for like,
yeah.
Oh, wow. So, see, they know us. They are
yeah.
us.
And you feel that. You feel like they know what you're going through.
That's
you're
the tribe.
You're not alone.
That's the tribe.
Just get to work.
You that's know? What, you know, and I'll be honest, and this is going to sound dumb and stupid and self-serving, but like when we go shoot a video at UMC, mm-hmm. to see all these different specialists show up and nurses and pharmacists and respiratory therapists and you and the doctors show up, and they all, for that minute, we're all just there to make the statement and to be together and to celebrate being in medicine.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. And when it happens in a setting like this, where it's in service of the patient directly, it's even more beautiful. And the whole community has stepped up.
Right.
Like I've seen stuff, like when we were in line for the blood donation thing, like the way people were treating each other and giving each other snacks and like they were talking on Facebook to each other and connecting. And right. it was a beautiful thing.
We got order pizzas today from one of the marijuana dispensaries.
Of course. They were like, and then if you need something to go with that pizza, you just let us know.
That's great.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Stacy says, this has got to provoke all the EDs to run a specific mass shooting drill. Do you think that's going to happen?
I mean, it's required. So the Joint Commission requires you as a hospital to exercise for disaster.
But here's the thing. There's exercises and there's exercises. It sounds like you guys have the exercise, like
yeah.
you, ORMC guys coming. You guys really, so
right.
the question is, would you ever think after all this is done that you guys would send out emissaries to the rest of the trauma community to teach what you've learned?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I have no doubt our, the trauma surgeons, the members of the team that were there, were, you know, took care of patients in that initial push when the first wave of patients came through. They have a lot to offer. There's a lot that other people can learn from our experience.
You know, Jenny Flaherty says something interesting. Thanks for talking about all the positives in a time of great sadness. It helps our hearts to heal. When this is how you and I got connected over this event.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you saw our show the other day, just
right.
briefly in passing, and texted me, took the time to text me and say, hey, thanks for doing that show. It's been crazy, but it's been wonderful, and everybody's been so great, and so on and so forth. And
yeah.
I said, wait a minute. You are right now undergoing a serious, stressful, mass casualty event. And all you can talk about in this text are the positives, how the consultants were so friendly and helpful, how people sent you food, how everybody came together.
Yeah.
And I just said, I need to have you on the show. Like, I don't care how tired you are.
Yeah.
I don't care how many more patients you
and
need
here
to
we
see.
Are.
Because the world needs to know.
Yeah.
The world needs to know. And you were like, I don't know. I don't really do shows and things like that. And I'm like, they need to know that in all this hatred and misery and the way the press spins everything as being just doom and gloom, that actually I've seen more good come from the response to this evil
right.
than would ever have happened. It's just this emergent, beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well,
and
think about it like this, Z. I mean, like, you know, with you guys learning from the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, you know, like, it's kind of weird. There's this weird arms race going on where the shooters are trying to get better at killing and everybody in healthcare is trying to get better at saving lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake, like, we hope that this does not happen again, ever.
No.
Right?
We want to train for something that never happens.
Right.
It's just like airline pilots don't want to ever train for a crash. We never want to see those stupid little oxygen masks drop
no.
from the ceiling, put one on ourselves first, and then our children. We never want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't train to do it. Now, one of the interesting things in the comments we see in everything that's posted about this horrible event is some idiot says, this is all fake. This is all green screen. Allison Anderson is a robot.
Oh.
Z-Dog is a shill for big,
wow.
big gun or whatever
okay.
it is. Because there is this conspiracy theory going around that all of this is fake, that this is not really happening. Now, as someone who saw holes in people, who's
right.
taking care of people whose lives are forever changed and maybe have lost their lives,
right.
how do you feel about that?
I mean, that's just silly. I mean, and even long after this, you know, the media moves on to the next thing,
yeah.
right? We'll still be taking care of these patients, and we'll still be seeing these families, and we'll still be, you know, following up the, you know, you get a gunshot wound in the abdomen, that's a lifetime of, you know, different
stuff,
complications.
Rehab.
And yeah, I mean, it's not, their lives, like you said, are forever changed, and they, I don't know, I mean, I don't even really know how I would respond to that.
I mean, you basically just did the
yeah.
way I think a rational person would
yeah.
respond. The way I respond is they are complete losers and need to die.
Yeah, I'm with
but
that.
That's me. That being said, Tom, some other comments here?
Emily says, here in Columbus, we do mock drills for this type of situation quarterly. Is it sort of a quarterly thing at UMC?
Yeah, a couple times a year.
A couple times a year, yeah. Well, Erin Burkhart is at ORMC, and she says, ORMC in the house, sending UMC all our love and support.
Yes.
Let's see some more. Maybe we should get together and send food to Karen. Karen is the conspiracy theorist.
Oh.
Now, fellow nurse, love to my brothers and sisters dealing with all of this, you rock. Now, as an APRN, speaking of nursing, you are in a unique position because you're in an advanced practice nurse, you have military training, and you work in trauma ICU at a very high-level setting. Have you found any pushback against someone like you with your credentials from doctors or the hierarchy of medicine, or do you find that you get to practice at the top of your game?
No, our hospital has really embraced recently the role, like the advanced practice role in trauma. And so we are extremely lucky. We have great support from both our hospital nursing administration, our nursing executives, and also the trauma surgeons that we work with.
That's great.
So there are two of us. My partner, so the way the trauma service at our hospital works is we have an ICU service and a trauma surgery service. And so there's two advanced practitioners, one on each service.
Got it.
So my partner, a nurse practitioner, she works on the floor service. We swap sometimes. And so between the two of us, we kind of cover
all of trauma.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is once your trauma patients, you guys, they can go from the trauma ICU down to standard trauma bed and then home. You could take care of them from beginning to end.
Right, it's the continuity. And that's a really big piece of our role is the continuity from day to day. You know, there's a different trauma surgeon, different attending on every day typically. And the trauma ICU attendings rotate every couple days. And so, and then we know also that the resident teams rotate every month.
Yeah, of course.
And with this, being on October 1st,
everyone
who works
in
an academic medical center knows that that was their first day rotating on their new service.
Wow.
Right. So that was a big part of us coming in and getting everybody into, these are our protocols, these are our systems, let's get these orders right. And that's what, you know, the first thing I knew when I came in was I was going to look at every patient in the ICU, make sure that everything was ordered correctly, that everybody had what they needed. Some patients, you know, there was very minimal ordering because, you know, our EMR. And
it's horrible.
It's not easy to navigate. And then imagine getting 27 admits in four hours.
Oh, my gosh. So were people taking a lot of verbal orders? Like, what was happening? How do you go through when you have an EMR and you've got so much to
do? Well, so the trauma activations are a mixture of paper and EMR.
I see.
So our trauma activations are still on paper.
Got it.
And so there's a lot of paper that happened
that
night.
That then gets scanned in.
Right, but then you've got to update continuity. We had, you know, patients getting identified and having to continue their medical record number when their names have been changed. And
Have you been having to talk to a lot of family?
Yeah, we talked to.
How's that been?
You know, that's one of the parts of my job that I enjoy. Like, I really like to spend time with especially my patients in the ICU that are in crisis, right? You know, they've had an event where they're in a situation where they're kind of on the worst day of their lives, and they're having trouble processing, let alone understanding the injuries, understanding what's going on, understanding they're fearing the worst. And so we have a way, you know, as we round, we invite our patients' families to come participate on rounds. Then we talk to them about, you know, what's being said, and this is what we're going to talk about, and then at the end we'll answer your questions. And so it's a very structured way, but it helps them to process what's going on.
Are those interdisciplinary rounds, so the whole team? So do you have a pharmacist?
We do, yep. Wow. So we just go, you know, every patient, every day, we round on them, we talk about the things that they need, we go system by system. It's very systematic, which is, you know, what the research shows. That's how ICU care needs to be done.
It's not cookbook, it's systematic,
right,
which is different.
It's all in the details.
Did you forget the DVT prophylaxis? Did you forget the PPI? Did you forget ventilator-associated pneumonia prophylaxis? Did you forget,
right,
you know, when was the last time that line was changed? What's going on with the Foley?
Right, and much of that is nursing care, right?
Yeah,
so
of course.
A lot of the ICU, like, and recently in the literature, a lot of the bundles that really make a difference when you're talking about delirium, when you're talking about, you know, VAPs and infections.
Ventilator-associated pneumonia.
It comes from the nurses to the team. And so we've really worked hard to integrate all levels of the patient care into
rounds,
making everyone feel comfortable. You know, it's all this,
that's awesome,
you know, kind of CRM stuff where everyone has a voice and everyone can say, hey, no, we haven't started, you know, the right medications. We don't have, you know, the Paradex or whatever needs to be ordered for an ICU patient.
Why can't we apply that to all of healthcare? You know, is it a resource issue? Is it a culture issue? Is it a training issue? It shouldn't be any of those things.
It's all of the above.
Because, you know, every time I've had interdisciplinary rounds on medicine, it's been kick butt. Mm-hmm. Except for that one guy. There's always that one guy who's like, I just want to talk to be heard, my voice. I like the sound of it.
It can take a lot of time.
Yeah,
it can take a lot of time.
It can. So sometimes there are structures So you guys have been doing that. You've been talking to family. How's it been for you personally as a mother, as a family person, to see people who were there, and you do this as a living, who are there having fun at a concert that looked pretty awesome, and then have their lives changed in an instant? Has it taken a toll on you personally, or has it not caught up? Or are you so good at this, doing it so much, that you're able to actually handle it and incorporate it?
I don't know. I guess that maybe I'm not that introspective about some of these things, but I think to work in this setting, there's a certain level of separation that kind of goes on. And so I try not to internalize and apply, you know, like, and take on the patient's experience in a way that I would have to cope with it. Does that make sense?
Can I unpack that a little more? The way I think about this, and again, because I'm exactly hearing what you're saying, because I've had to do this myself, It's the difference between empathy, which is taking on the patient's pain, feeling it as your own. What would it be like if my daughter were shot?
Right.
What would it be like if I were in that bed? And that's one type of way to connect with patients, but it will burn you out. It will make you make short-term decisions that are bad, and you will go home crying every day, or hurt, or internalized, or whatever it is. Versus compassion, which is, and competence, and what we call cognitive empathy, which is understanding what a patient is going through and recognizing it and thinking through it, knowing that they're suffering, having concern for their suffering, but not taking that suffering internally and feeling it as your own, which will devastate you and make you make dumb decisions.
Right, yeah, it doesn't help the process.
So,
and I think certain populations are easier and hard. I mean, whenever we have bad trauma, bad pediatric trauma, it's really difficult.
It's
really difficult to not, you know, feel that person's lived experience
and
the way the parent, you know, it's really tough.
Or you have the drunk driver and the victim of the drunk driver.
Right, side by side.
Side by side, which we see all the time. So these are the things that make what we do uniquely human, but also means we have to transcend in a very unique way that often we don't get perfectly trained for or perfectly supported for.
Yeah.
And then we go home often to families that aren't in medicine and we can't. Do you find that you're able to express what's been going on? Do you need to? Or
Find you get the support? Well, there's a certain amount of, I don't say de-stressing, but a certain amount of discussion that goes on among the team, right? Because you know your team understands what you're going through. You know that they get it.
Yeah.
And even people that don't work here with you or that you've trained with and now they're somewhere else, you know, there are certain people who yesterday, all I had to text was, this has been a day, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
or like, as you say one thing and
they know exactly.
And they're like, I got a pizza coming to you at 11 o'clock.
to this day, like when I go back to the Bay Area and I connect with my old hospitalist colleagues.
Right, there's a connection there.
We don't even have to say a word. We'll just look at each other. So tell me what your shifts were like. And they're just like, okay, let's have a beer right now. And let's distress and let's make jokes. And sometimes it's gallows humor and sometimes it's not. It's inappropriate. I mean, it's what we do and it's okay. Like humor is a high level coping mechanism as long as we're not directing it or taking it out on people or using it as a wedge. And I've been guilty of that in my training and beyond. But I try now to think about it as how do we bring people together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think too, I mean, at least for me, foundationally, you know, when you, in our specialty, I mean, I don't want to get too philosophical, but
please do. Actually. You know, I love that.
The way, you know, trauma to those of us, some of us, you know, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but for those of us that choose trauma, there's something in it that I think represents kind of the best of who we are as a society, right? Mm-hmm. You're taking care of someone in their moment of most vulnerability. Whoever comes through the door, we don't judge their situation, you know, their circumstances of their injury. They come to us, we take care of their injuries and get them back. You know, like, it's like second chances, it's like redemption, it's like there's a high level
you know, foundational appreciation for humanity in it. And I think that's why, I mean, that's why I think trauma is really special. But that's why I do it.
You know what?
But everyone doesn't do it, so everyone probably doesn't feel that way.
I get emotional just hearing you talk about it. And we were talking before the show, and you're like, yeah, I'm not much of a talker, and I don't really talk about philosophical stuff, so I'll just give people the facts of what happened. And I'm like here going, oh, my God, that's the most beautiful description of taking care of other human beings that I've heard in a while. Kurt Vonnegut used to say, like, the most amazing symbol and poignant symbol of man's humanity to man is a fire truck. Because the fact that people would go into danger to save other people for very little money, just to do it, is a symbol of our shared humanity. And I think you can expand that to people who take care of trauma, to the medical profession. And so, you know, Tom, do we have some comments? Because it's hard to outdo that.
One of the things that's coming to my mind, Z, is I was watching Dr. Fildes on CBS News, was interviewing him earlier, who is the trauma chief at UMC, I think is his title. And Dr. Fildes is just like as cool and calm and as collected as can be. And the reporter is clearly asking him baiting questions to try and get him to be like, we were running around with our heads cut off. We didn't know what was going on. Right. It was crazy. You know, and I think that's how a lot of us patients or non-medical people view it on the outside, that, it was just going to be this chaotic scene. And then hearing how well you guys just, like, you know, triaged everybody, got everybody back in trauma, started treating everybody right away, and the efficiency with which it all works together and how the team works together is pretty inspiring, really.
Yeah. Well, and Dr. Fildes, like, he's such a professional. The way he handled that interviewer, I'm sure I didn't see it, is the way he handles trauma.
Yeah.
You know, like, he just gets it done.
Everybody there, like Dale Karasen, is that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, these are true, you know, humans that do their job in a, it, when we talk about, again, I hate to harp on the compassion versus empathy thing, but a doctor that you want taking care of you is someone who is so competent, who you know understands your suffering, but doesn't start crying in front of you because of it, doesn't break down, is strong about it, is competent, you know they understand and they're gonna do their best to take care of me. And that's what you want. Curious how many vents UMC had available, says Catherine Rathbone.
I don't know the answer to that.
That's a lot. I saw they had they brought in another 50 vents or something.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
It's been crazy. And how do you handle situations like this from a psychological perspective, Kaylee Suzanne? And again, I think we're seeing already that Allison and her team probably, they do this for a living.
Right. Like,
you guys are dialed. It doesn't mean that you don't have hard days.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you may not even have an element. So one thing I heard, and you can correct me if you think this is crazy, I got some private messages from folks working the back end at Sunrise, and they had a lot of doctors come in who maybe don't do trauma all the time. And they said these doctors were shook. Like, were really, they'd never seen anything like this. And they were worried that they were really affected by this. And the question then is, what do we do for the mental health of our first responders, our EMS people who ran into that shooting scene, right?
Right.
Police officers, those kind of things. I think it'd be remiss and if we don't think about it. And I know in the military, there's often a culture of like,
Just handle it.
And same with medicine.
Yeah, it's not always that way. Like, there's definitely a move towards processing and dealing with things, because we know, I mean, we obviously know that when you have events, like traumatic events that you don't deal with, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And we see that, you know, in the military community with PTSD
constantly,
and that sort of mental health issues. And so we do, so the UMC has a second victim responder group that will come and talk to people if they're having trouble. If not even related to this incident, but if your patient dies, you know, it doesn't even matter what it is, something happens, you can activate this team of people that will come and talk to you and kind of help go through that process, which I don't think, it hasn't really, I don't know how often it gets used or how it exactly works, but I know it's available, and that says a lot.
I knew it existed at UMC because I know we've had house staff who've used it.
And after this incident, I mean, we've had multiple opportunities to debrief, to kind of talk about things, to get together and...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and we'll continue to do it. You know, I mean, as things come up, we'll continue to talk about exactly what happened, what we could have done better. You know, and that's just kind of a...
Do you feel very supported right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
The support has been overwhelming.
Good.
Allison, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When things like this happen for you, does it just sort of, re-solidify why you went into this field and show you why you love to be there for people in these moments?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that when you when you practice for something, you think about it, you train for it, and then you get to do it, there's a great sense of purpose for what you do.
That's what it is. It's a connection, a purpose, the reason I'm here, those kind of things.
Right.
Like, I'm here for this reason.
And you talk to anyone who is on our team, anyone who maybe was out of town or, you know, on vacation, and they weren't here for it.
They're bummed.
Right. They're like, I can't believe I missed being a part of this, because they want to, if it's going to happen, they want to be there.
Yeah. And Tom and I were talking about this because, I'm a hospitalist. I generally see chronically ill and acutely ill medical patients. Mm-hmm. So trauma is a foreign thing. I consult on trauma, but I don't see acute trauma.
Right.
And I don't work in the ED seeing emergency patients. I take admissions from the emergency department. So when I hear something like this, my first thought is, I really feel I want those trauma surgeons to be supported. I want the anesthesiologist
and
to be there.
I
want.
Like I said, our other services were so amazing. Like we had a full list of ICU patients in trauma ICU. And the month before, we had a pulmonary fellow rotating with our service as part of her training.
I know those
guys. Knew all of our patients. And then, so they came in the next morning, and their chief of medical critical care is a good friend of mine. And he said, I called everybody in. I want you to offload anyone you can to our service. And we were like, okay, we gave them a whole list of patients that, you know, their trauma issues are essentially solved, but they're still on the service. You know, we're teeing them up to go to LTAC or whatever. And
100%, he was like, don't,
away.
I thought they weren't
And everyone
take
looked
the
at each other and they were like, do not let this opportunity of goodwill take advantage. And the same thing, our hospitalists, they would come to us and say, who can I take off your hands? You know, not just like, call us if you need any help. Like, I'm here and I want to help and I'll take whatever you have.
Exactly. Well, I'm excited because I'm on service in the next couple weeks, and I'm probably going to be seeing as consult a lot of the, if there's medical issues, which is what I do. And so then I feel connected to what I do.
Yeah.
And that's important. One of the things, one of the comment threads we're getting back here is I'd made a mention of the fact that a lot of times patients don't want to see you cry in front of them. They don't want to see you take on this sort of burden onto yourself. But many people point out, well, sometimes they do want to cry with you. Sometimes they do want a doctor who's capable of crying over their suffering. And the truth is, I think that's a fine line, and we often know when that case is. Like, we've all had the stories where you'll sit with a patient and cry, or you'll go home and cry about something. But the art of medicine and the humanity of it is knowing when that is and feeling it. And I think if you're a person who's always on the edge of tears in every encounter with a difficult situation, then I think you're practicing too much empathy and maybe not enough focused compassion, which all those things can be cultivated. You can cultivate compassion.
Oh, yeah. It's a skill. Talking to patients is a skill.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at
the medical
students. They're so good at it.
Right.
Like,
they're not born that way.
No.
They become good at
it.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Let's see some more comments, and then we got to let Allison
get some rest. What a nice conversation about real patient care and trauma. That's kind of why we want to have Allison on, because, like, this is not what you're going to get on the news, man. Mm-hmm. There's nothing
Well, and I certainly don't
news.
Speak for everyone who takes care of trauma, but we have a super tight team.
And I've experienced that in most trauma departments where I've been, in hospitals where I've worked. You know, in Fresno at CRMC, they had a tremendous trauma department. At San Francisco General, they had a tremendous trauma department. You know, at Stanford, they had a great trauma department. So it's just very connected.
Allison, what's it like with the zoo that the hospital becomes with all the reporters outside? And so, were you getting, like, hounded on your way into work?
We see them. I try to avoid them, actually.
Yeah, that's smart.
I don't want to be in the mix. I don't want to be filmed. I don't want to be interviewed.
You know, that's why we're so honored
why
that you came here. Because you know we're legit, girl. No,
anytime I get to spend with you fine people is time.
Likewise.
Well spent.
It's like, it's huge for us. Well, no, but, you know, and that actually gets to the point, like, what is our role anyways? Like here I am. Should I be in the hospital, like, consulting on the COPDs, or should we be spreading the word about what you do? And I think it's a mix.
Yeah, I think what you're doing is amazing.
Well, no, what you're doing is amazing. What we do is professional clownery. But what we want to do is give a platform for people like you who are there. And, you know, talking clinician to clinician is something that you don't get to do with a reporter because they are buttholes. many of them. And they don't know. They don't know.
Right. You they
know,
don't understand. Even it's not their fault.
It's not their fault. Now, Sanjay Gupta may understand, and he's incredibly handsome. But even he is a couple abstractions removed. So the one thing I want to ask you, what can people do to help right now? Because people feel powerless, right?
Yeah,
so what can they do? You're on the front lines. You're taking care of these patients.
You've talked about donating blood. I would say don't donate blood today.
Yeah.
Schedule yourself to donate blood
Logan.
Next week. And then set like a reminder to donate blood regularly because it's always needed.
Yes,
right.
Agree.
The other thing to do, I mean, get to know your trauma system.
Yeah.
I think support. There are times when we need support from the community for certain initiatives, whether it's legislative on safety issues that we feel really strongly about, whether it's, you know, your health department figuring out how, you know, our population in Las Vegas is growing, so we're trying to figure out how the trauma system is going to grow to accommodate that.
Yeah.
We want to make it right so that people get taken care of properly. There's no doubt we'll be asking for support pretty soon. The other thing that people can do, and this seems not related, but talk to your loved ones about your wishes.
Oh, snap. Exactly. Keep going with that.
So
tell me why.
First thing you have to do is think about it yourself on what is an acceptable quality of life. So if you think about it, if I was at a concert and I got shot, what would I, you know, like what is the, because people have different levels. You've read
Being Mortal.
Gawande's book, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, everyone is different in the level of functionality that they find to be acceptable. And if you never talk about that with your loved ones, they don't know. There it is. Yes, such a great book.
Amazing book.
Then they'll never know. And then when we talk to you after you're intubated and sedated, and we talk to your family members and we ask what would they have wanted, it takes an enormous strain off your family if you've talked about it ahead of time.
You know, this is the most amazing conversation I've had in a while because I know all this stuff, but it wouldn't have occurred to me if I was talking to the Z-Pack to go, Z-Pack, one of the things you can do to really help is think about what you would do if you were shot and what your wishes were. Why does it help? Because everything that Allison
kind of
said,
morbid.
When you're there in the ICU and people are trying to figure out what to do and the family doesn't know what your wishes were and you're relatively young and you may not have return of function, what are your wishes? And if you can have that conversation today with your decision maker, and that means you got to pick a decision maker.
Right.
Who is going to speak for you when you can't speak? And it better not be your mom or your dad because they're going to speak with emotion and they're going to override what your wishes are. You pick someone who you trust to do the right thing for you. And it may not be the closest family member. So that is such a crucial piece of
advice. And your family members might surprise you when you have this conversation and they say, you know, if I have to lose 3 of my 5 fingers, pull the plug.
Pull the plug,
you know?
Yeah.
Or how they would want to live. You know, he talks about the guy, the patient who, if I couldn't eat ice cream and watch football.
I don't want to do it.
I don't want to live.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's okay. Like, that's your wish.
And, you know, we've done songs about this. Mm-hmm. It's a crucial discussion. The supporting the trauma department in general in times of peace, when it's just your standard background levels of trauma.
Well, and I did also mention to, like, be safe and not make stupid decisions.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. So you're saying
wear your helmet on your motorcycle.
Here you go. Allison, hold my LaCroix. Check this out.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't forget that trauma is 100% preventable.
Yes. Trauma is 100% preventable. You're right. We would have to stop this lunatic from shooting out of the window. But there
Well, and
other
that's
ways.
A conversation we've
That's a conversation for another, another day.
As a society.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that.
Allison, you are freaking amazing. You are my hero. I think you're the heroes of many people in the comments. Z-Pack, like, just, actually, I'm just going to tell this to Allison. So we usually tend to attract people to come be in our videos that spontaneously offer who are aligned with us in some way. Mm-hmm. And if what we're trying to talk about is building this vision where we take care of each other and we practice at the top of our license and we're trying to build Health 3.0 in service of patients and compassion, and you found us and we found you and connected and stayed connected, that says something to me. And I think to the Z-Pack who are here, like, because you are part of that connection with us. We are the tribe of people who are helping other people. We are Kurt Vonnegut's fire truck. Symbol of man's goodness to each other, and it's just such an honor to have you on the show.
Thank
really
you.
Is. Thank you.
This is getting a little too deep. I think.
I know. We're going to have to break before it gets like weepy and stuff.
I haven't really had enough sleep.
I know. I know. I know. I hear you. Tom, any parting thoughts?
Vegas strong.
Vegas strong, son. We are the greatest city on the planet. And if you come here, Raiders, you better start winning, okay? Or else we'll kick you out back to Oakland. Please click the donate button on our UMC video that we shared earlier today. Donate blood, have discussion about your wishes, support your trauma department. And we're gonna be supporting Allison and UMC and Sunrise and every institution here in Vegas. And you are gonna train the rest of the world on how to handle these incidents because you are the bomb and we are out. Go, 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 go. That's the birthday. I was just saying how awesome she was, and like she was like.
Where am I supposed to look?
It was made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build Health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up.